Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're going to start our coverage of Knights.
And Knights.
Yeah, just really their history and some of that stuff.
Not as cool as Titans, but continue.
Yeah, we'll get to Titans later. For those new, 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with a focus on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe. In our show notes, you'll see links to our website, the40klorecast.com, our Patreon, and our Discord. For those of you who haven't, please follow and comment on the cast. It helps us out a ton and improves our algorithm a lot.
What is this episode?
80.
So it took, what, 60 episodes for you not to say like and subscribe? I mean, I'm proud of you, though.
I know. Monkey see, monkey do. People keep saying like and subscribe, and then I realize we're not on YouTube. So there it is. But on that note, the more comments and follows that we get, the more we're spreading new listeners. Which
it's a big deal, everyone. For whatever reason, the algorithm. If we can get people talking, you can talk crap to us if you want to.
Yeah,
it legitimately helps us.
You know
get
what? Out there. I'm gonna be honest. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's. Whatever is kind of my thing. I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for fans. Like, I hope people like what we're doing. We're making this for you. But I am kind of a competitive boob. And so at its core, then when I ask everyone to make comments and follow, it's not because I actually get anything out of it directly. What I get out of it is that we get ranked ahead of people who I don't like. And I get to know that made them sad. And that makes me happy.
And so. I'm desperately hoping that someone will like and appreciate anything that I do before I die.
Yeah, Brad's on that boat. I just really enjoy. We had a little bit of a run there where we got ahead of some pretty big podcasts, and I just hope
you were so
some
happy about people were specific individuals.
Oh yeah, I didn't care. Brad was like, "We're ranked 40th in the entire world." And I'm like, 31st. I don't care. Fine, I didn't care because all I cared about is we were ahead of some people who I severely disliked.
Haterade. Stop drinking that Haterade, bro.
It was great. So anyway. If you go to our website, you can find links to our merchandise,
which is Patreon. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Please get some of our merch. It's so good.
It actually is very good. Brad's coaching services, Brad cheating on me with Alan with his other podcast, and also links to our
also,
upcoming events.
If you go to my other cast, please leave a comment.
Our Discord is also available. It's a totally free server. It's built with you all in mind. It was designed as a place so you can interact with the cast itself, but I'm not that self-important. It also is about 40K literature, 40K gameplay, hobbying memes, or just general 40K. The idea was to give a place, if you like what we're doing here, and it's because you like the topic. I hope you're not just only here because you love my voice so much, in which case, seriously, see a doctor.
I, however, think the other way around. If you're here just for my voice, I love everything about you. Also, John's Bannerman, get out of the Legend of Brad channel. Yeah. It's ridiculous. There's too many of you.
Yeah. People like me more. Anyway, with the Discord, though, it really is a wonderful place. It's very healthy and a good community. So thank you, Kevin, Nick, Maisie, Brian, Ethan, Steve, Ryan, Trevor, and David. Sometimes I should change that order up a little bit. I just keep copying and pasting it to every show note. Thanks to you guys, we have a Discord. So huge thank you to them. Lastly, if you want to play the game of 40K on the tabletop or online via TTS, Brad has coaching services available. You can find information on our website or you can link to it through via our Discord. 30 years of experience. Brad's not bad at it. You won a few events.
One every year since 2000.
We'll see.
I'll still win something this year before I die.
We'll see. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, no matter your experience level, Brad actually has, more importantly, he has experience coaching a person like you. And that's what makes him a very good coach. No matter, he's not going to make you on day one be like, okay, well, here's your prep for a 42-round major in Las Vegas where the lights only work half the time, you know, type setup. This is, Brad designs his coaching around the needs of his customers. So
awesome. Nothing makes me sadder and happier at the same time than Kevin and Nick.
Yeah.
Literally handling all the things with, Brad has health issues, so he may take a little while to contact you. And I'm like, thank you, but
I told him, just make the bot say it automatically. Yeah. Thanks for your contact. Brad's currently in the hospital. All right, let's dive into knights. So Imperial Knight origins are pretty interesting. They actually come back from the age of technology. So M15. So this is 15,000 years before the emperor left, and 25,000 years before current 40K.
Right. It was 26.
Yeah,
it can be 26.
True.
Which is funny because it's technically, you're like, you're 1,000 years off. That seems like a big deal. But in 40K, it's not.
And this was a really good time kind of for the galaxy. This is before the Eldar. So the Eldar civilization is at their peak, and the pleasure cults are just beginning to form, but not heavy. So the warp was mostly tranquil.
It's a good time for humanity because we're at our pinnacle of technology, and we haven't had any internal strife. But also, this is at the height of the Eldar civilization, but it's also at the height of their giving no shits.
Yeah, well, the Eldar civilization at this point are in their peak, but they're not, the reason it's so good for humanity, they're not in expansion at all. They've got enough of the galaxy that they're just content, and they're focusing on their things.
They're apathetic now.
Yeah.
Because they've gotten to that point. This is where the pleasure cults are about to start.
Yep.
It's a great time for humanity because Eldar could wreck us at any time, but they don't because they're so apathetic. They don't.
Yeah, it's all the way over. Although it's interesting, the way the Eldar spread through the galaxy is they actually were pretty close to Sol, which is interesting. But that's a side note.
They're real close.
Yeah, for another friendly cast.
But they just don't bother, which is a great time for us because we're just putting it out there, and we kind of just don't go where the original humanity really good about
this. We'll get into that. I actually disagree with that. I think we did go there, but just they're all dead. It didn't matter.
That's true. There was smoking people.
Yeah, we probably expanded out in a circle, but part of that circle got clipped real quick.
Real quick.
Yeah.
That was also when they went, we would reprise the... We're very lucky that Eldar were such douches because they were like, you go do something about it, but why?
Yeah, why bother? Yeah.
Snills snotty with their monocle on. That's kind of what I think. Yeah.
So the rest of the galaxy, though, also is equally in check. The orcs are kind of a little bit stuck on the other side of the Eldar. And the Eldar, more importantly, with the orcs, were very aware because they came up together of how dangerous the orcs were.
Oh, they're doing 100% preemptive strikes on the orcs all the time. Yeah.
There were no Waz affected.
Fun
story on that. There were no orc Waz until basically around the time of the Great Crusade.
Eldar was in charge
because they couldn't do it. Tyranids are not in the galaxy. Votan, no matter what the origin story, don't exist. Tau don't exist.
Tau actually do not exist at this time.
Yeah, that's the Tau do not exist.
Not even you making fun of them. They really don't exist.
It was a really good time. I said it was a really good time for the galaxy.
Sorry, that was just mean. John coming in from left field, knocking it out of the park.
The Necrons are all asleep. Even, I think, Trajan at this point is still asleep.
Only person is, the Silent King's the only one that's
asleep. Oh, that's right, the Silent King, but he's out in dark space.
He's pouting in dark space.
Yeah, he's out in dark space, moving his way towards probably where the
millions of years of meditation.
But the most important part, though, outside of the Tau not existing, is that there's no chaos. And when I say chaos, I mean, the chaos gods obviously are beginning to wake up, but Slaanesh has not been born yet. They're still in their infancy, so there's no demonic incursions occurring into the galaxy, and obviously no chaos space marines. So for humanity, so long as they didn't, as we were just discussing, bump into an Eldar world, they're kind of free to conquer it. There were obviously other Xenos that probably would have put up a fight, like early Ragnar, that kind of stuff.
Smoking them.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't know. Probably.
But they say the age of technology, we had pretty bananas tech.
Yeah.
Actually, so, it wasn't even military tech. We were so much better at colonizing worlds back then.
Let's talk about that, because that's actually a really good transition to STCs. So we've talked about it before. An STC stands for Standard Template Constructs.
I think you meant to say GEC.
Yeah, it's a GEC. That's what it is. And if you don't know what a GEC is, stop listening to the cast, go download Fallout 1, and just be and enjoy the better life I just made for you. Because now you've lived your life after playing Fallout.
Also, you're welcome.
Your life is legitimately better. So these STCs or GECs were designed so that when mankind could go out, they were fully capable of colonizing and controlling the worlds. And I like this a lot. The concept of an STC is that when you land on somewhere, you turn the STC on, and it contains all the stuff it needs to build whatever it was meant to design. And they're all unique in purpose. So one would build like a chair. Another one would build a toaster.
They did whole habitats and everything like that. But they can be as expansive as you want, though, because some were in charge of, hey, you need to build the infrastructure of a city. And they went, no problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. An STC would build an entire factory. Yeah. Like one STC.
Right.
You know.
Well, the funny thing is that there some of them, because they talk about it in ad mech lore.
Yeah.
Some STCs are like, what does this STC do? It's like, it makes ice cream. Yeah. And the other one made a full city's infrastructure. Yeah. You're like, and these were the same thing?
And the next one built a plasma cannon that could crack a planet. You're like, they were all next to each other? Yeah.
You're like, what, did you roll the dice on each one?
And for the record, the ad mech pressed the on button on all three of them the exact same way. Like, this will work great. This is ice cream. I don't have a mouth. This thing sucks.
Screw you, Carl.
Exactly. But the biggest piece is the STCs used for the planets. The first big one, obviously, was terraforming. And the terraforming of the planets, so they would actually build the terraformers because they would land on the planet, and it's a galaxy. Every planet's a little bit different, but humanity isn't. So we've got a very narrow band that we can survive in.
So and how so we are we machine. Doing anything?
I mean, this it's
too hot or it's too cold.
It's sci-fi. None of this would ever actually work in reality. Yeah. It's basically impossible.
Well, the best part about the STC is old mankind, age of technology mankind, was terraforming things like that.
Yeah, it was a nothing thing. However, the terraforming...
The reason we have millions of worlds is because of this.
I mean, because most of the worlds were terraformed.
I mean, also, they were skyhooking
Fenris
STCs onto every... Well,
Fenris was a goofy attempt at a weird terraform. I mean, a lot of the worlds that we're discovering, also including the vacant ones, were terraformed. So,
but the thing is that they terraformed a ton of worlds that they never even colonized. They just put they effectively just...
See, I've read that. I disagree with that. I actually think they fully colonized those worlds and everyone died.
Possibly. No, I'm just saying, like, but
we have a tendency to rewrite the history. Like, we just sent a terraformer there with no people whatsoever. Dude, there's literally skeletons.
That is lore. Yeah, that is canon skeleton. Lore that says that we just had...
Who wrote it?
Yeah. What? I'm just saying we show up and a lot of worlds are just ready to go.
Yeah.
Because
it's the humanity same way,
was rocking and rolling.
It's the same way the British Museum of full of things they just found. I was wandering through, the Fertile Crescent, and there was this 30-foot statue just kind of leaning with a big free sign on it.
You discovered something? Yeah. Yes, I'm doing air quotes again. You can't see it.
The bigger piece, though, with the STCs for 40K lore is the weapons. And of note, quickly, as we just said, it's the ad mech want nothing more than to find all these weapons. And more often than not, it's terrible when they find them because they will just flip the on switch. And it might be a planet cracking laser that happens to be positioned aimed at the current planet.
Yeah.
And they flick the switch and go, oops. But I want to talk more about the concept of the STCs because it really is genius. The STCs, so mankind, when it first began its expansion, didn't have warp travel. They do get it actually in this period of time, but when it first built the STCs, they had no warp travel, which means you had to go at sublight or just barely above light speed. So these journeys would take generations before they would reach their target. It's impossible functionally to hand down manufacturing technology and knowledge through multiple generations without them physically doing
having
it.
To do anything.
Yeah. Like theory is just, it doesn't translate.
It's an abstract concept.
Exactly. Right? And so what would happen is you, if they'd done it without STCs, the conjugate would just land and some great, great engineer would be trying to figure out how to turn a plasma cannon on, and then they would all die. So instead, this was designed that you just kind of just kept the colonists alive and not in like the Wally style.
Wally.
That movie made me cry, by the way. It was so good, but I've only seen it once because it was so sad. The idea is, though, is the planets land, the STCs kick on, and then it makes everything the colonists needed. Even later, when the navigators were created, which we don't know where they're coming from, so I say created because...
Also, humanity's been douches
right. For
the entire time. There's a 100% chance that we thought there was a mutation, and we went, cool, only let these people talk to each other.
It's a helpful mutation. Even with warp travel, though, as we discussed before, and I was like, bring up, warp travel is not instant. So we went from what might have taken a 200-year journey is now down to a 11-year journey, which is a lot better than 200 years. But in 11 years, you still do have turnover of population. So the STCs still are critical. Now, this is a cast about knights, so let's talk about the STCs and knights.
Let's talk about the fact that knights weren't just the awesome robots of war originally.
Yeah.
Like, the original form of a knight was, yes, it had a bunch of these offensive, it was a devastating thing, but it also had three different shovels.
Yeah, well, if you build a knight, when you buy a knight kit, for the most part, I mean, some are different, but if your knight kit has arms on it, you could build a knight that has no weapons on it. You shouldn't, but you could.
Good.
You know, that's how they all were. They're a multifunctional thing. So during the age of technology, mankind was sending probes basically around the galaxy, as well as high-powered telescopes to kind of scout potential systems. So they knew kind of where they could land and colonize. And they have the terraforming capabilities. But, you know, the issue with that is that you don't know what's truly there till you get there. And so part of that is twofold. One, defensively, but more importantly, the work you have to do. So you'd land on a planet and the STCs would kick on. And these massive ships, I actually should mention, the colony ships had people in them, but they also had a hoard of raw materials for the STCs.
Humanity, by the way. One of the things that we do is we make the biggest ships. Are they the best ships? Nope.
Nope.
But are they the biggest? Yep. Wildly by far.
And so the ships were designed to land with all this cargo in the ship, and actually the ship themselves would be cannibalized into the original settlement. So within a couple of weeks of landing, you've got a small city. And not just like, you know, like housing, you've got manufacturing and agriculture, fortifications. And the knights are one of these big pieces because at their core, a knight's nothing more than a bipedal robot, which allows, and that's important because tracks are better for a lot of things, but moving across unpredictable terrain, legs are better. And so these things would come, the knights would come through and actually do a lot of the initial work. They would, you know, like the loader Ripley's in Aliens, same concept. It would pick up heavy things.
I love this because you're just like, and it's an Invictor War suit. You know that's right.
Oh, yeah. The Invictor War suit is a 100% ripoff of Aliens. Like, it's not even subtle. Like, it has the same, like, the way the guy's arms are in it and the cage around it, which I also want to point out, just shoot the dude. Like, why does it have high toughness? Why can't I just roll a 6 to shoot the dude?
I saw Matrix. Sometimes you got to put a screen door in front of that guy.
Yeah, just throwing it out there. Anyway, so the original knights helped the original colonists with a lot of activities. The arms would pick up heavy structures or slabs. The actual favorite one is the chainsword that they have was actually designed to clear forests. Obviously, it could clear other things.
Well, one of my favorites is some of the most powerful weapons on a knight were actually mining.
Oh, yeah, they're mining lasers. You're right. Yeah, there's 100% mining lasers. They also had some drills, too. But yeah, they had mining lasers to blow apart rocks. So these giant knights would walk over to what became a quarry and would just mine.
They're really cool at killing other stuff, but they were meant for boring into mountains. Yeah.
Now, they were also built for war, obviously. And the age of technology, this came up a lot because this was also the age of the Men of Iron. Which just FYI, I think we're going to do a cast soon on the Age of Technology, Age of Strife, because writing these notes, I got into it. So,
whoopsie.
We
had a problem with AI. Click just play massive.
Yeah. So what ends up happening is, so we're talking about, Brad was discussing earlier how important this part of history was from a technology standpoint. This is M18 to M22. In that era, we have the highest level of technology in the Imperium. It's higher than
it is right now.
Yeah. Oh, by a wide margin.
Like a wide margin.
Yeah. Volkite, plasma. I mean, a lot of this technology, it's coming from this era. And the Imperial Knights armaments followed this because, as much as we talked about the Knights being helpful, they also would land on, for like, you know, building the settlement, they also would land on planets that were under claim or occupation from Xeno species. And this is a period of time where mankind is just mankind. There's no space marines. There's no custodes. It's not even Skitarii. So, you know, they had some genetic alteration, but not enough.
That's the one thing that we actually did progress farther than them. They were much better at everything that was in civilization, regular civilization. But even back then,
very squishy.
Humanity was still
very squishy.
I'm saying squishy, but also let's go with the, why do we make knights? Because every time we met somebody that wasn't humans, we have been and we always will be dicks about meeting.
Yeah, we've had some differences of opinions. And so
we eliminated everybody we met.
Well, and that's what would happen is effectively mankind would make planet fall on a non-Eldar planet. Because if it was an Eldar planet, they don't get to make planet fall.
Yeah, you're just going to eliminate
it. And you'd have other races would come to fight at this point if they're on the planet. I don't think they would have bumped into orcs. If they had, orcs would have
ended them. Orcs are really far away at this point.
Yeah, but the Ragdan weren't that far off, though. So there is a question, but this is well before
the Ragdan. There's a real thing that we could have met the Ragdan early. Because Ragdan is an ancient, right?
We don't know. That's like all of them, we don't know where they're from. But the knights at their side, the humanity really could just colonize anything they wanted to colonize. Again, unless it was the Eldar, because the Eldar were just like, oh, that's an adorable knight. Meet our version of it.
He did three backflips.
It's literally like you have like Robbie the robot and we have
Cirque du Soleil.
We have a Power Ranger.
Go.
But all of this in M22 starts to get weird.
Well, let's talk about why it started to get weird.
Yeah.
Humanity started to have some issues, but Eldar broke the sky.
Well, it's beginning. So M22 is when the warp starts to really start to shift around a lot.
Which is when they're already breaking.
But they broke the sky in M30.
Yes, but I'm saying they started to break the upside down.
There we go. Yeah, that better.
We get first psykers start to appear, and you're like, is that their fault?
This is the moment that the first psykers begin to pop up. And this is a problem. Because first off, the early psykers are like 30% helpful and like 70% terrible.
I think that's a terrible percentage.
You think it's way more than the other
thing? I think it's terrible. 95%. Every story we get from the origin of psykers is psykers murdering everybody
Who wrote those stories? Just saying, like, according to the ecclesiarchy, psykers are bad. Thanks.
Have they ever put out a falsehood? Heresy, John, heresy.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So the colonies, what ends up happening is that this starts to lead the first chunk, which is civil war just in the colonies. So these psykers in a lot of places become warlords, and they start trying to get control of the planet, which starts devolving this age into, you know, just anarchy. Then it gets a lot worse, because in M23, what's called the cybernetic revolt begins. This is when the Men of Iron turned on humanity.
Well, let's pause on that, because we're going to do a whole thing. But
we're going to do a whole cast.
Men of Iron aren't just our fighting force. The Men of Iron did,
Well, that's everything. Agriculture, construction, everything. So the Men of Iron went on strike which wouldn't have been as bad. It's the fact that part of them going on strike was also murder. There's a lot of, there's some pretty good homages here to Karl Marx. Just what if the proletariat completely stood up and murdered the bourgeoisie?
Yeah, we completely gave our civilization over to the men of iron as far as everything that's day-to-day function.
Exactly. And so what happens is humanity goes to war with these robots, which unfortunately double hits them. Because first off, they're trying to kill robots, which never goes very well. So they're getting slaughtered by them. At the same time, though, the robots aren't producing food. So even if you beat them, you starve to death. But then the last and worst part hits right after. And this is an explosion of warp storms. You know, around this, just as a cybernetic revolt is really kind of going, Slaanesh starts to form in the warp. And this turns the warp into like an apocalyptic level storm.
So you turn the blender on frappe.
You can't see anything. So in a matter of a few years, every human colony in the entire galaxy is,
there's a complete AI revolt and you have no information.
Yeah.
And so you basically you got an email that said, hey, all of our society, the AI is revolting and you will get no.
And you're on your own.
Father response.
So what happens is basically every single human colony that's not really in the same system as another colony is totally isolated. And the ones that are in the systems are isolated. Oh, and by the way, some of the ones that are in the same system go to war with each other. This whole thing just sucks. Unless you were on a night world.
This is actually crazy. And I'm going to give props to this because I'm not a huge night guy, but
yeah.
During this time, knights and what ended up being the caste and the families of knights became badass.
Yeah. So the knights have a very interesting mechanic. This is the machines into utilization. You can't just pilot a knight by sitting in a cockpit and moving levers.
Really? You had so many opportunities to say, one does not simply pilot a knight. Come on.
Nah, that was lame.
And that was awesome.
It was lame. It's like, fuck. This is me messing with Brad because he's all excited about something and I just do this to make him sad inside.
This is terrible.
It's fun. So all the knights have a basic means of control with like function, but you can't actually use it. Instead, the pilot is hardwired into the knight and they become one. Basically like Pacific Rim, but just one person. Which, side note, I really want to like Pacific Rim. I really do. It's got some great scenes in it, but the acting is so painful. It's hard to watch it. The second one's even worse. It's just so, like, everything about Pacific Rim, except for the monster fight, was terrible.
I mean, they could have just stood at that hole and cut him in half with a sword.
Yeah, we're good. That's all I'm saying. All right, but anyway.
So I do a lot of stuff that people can't see.
You do. Brad's a very visual
podcaster. We should do a podcaster. Podcast at some point in time.
No, I don't feel like I have to get cameras. It's just work. If you guys want to see what Brad looks like in the dark, you can go to his other cast. You're always in the dark.
Because lights hurt my head.
Yeah. It's like, I just want to point out, like, you know what's really good for you with migraines? A big bright light in front of their face.
It's the worst.
All right. So anyway, back to the knights. So kind of like the black carapace is for the space marines, the pilot's able to interact completely with a knight around him and control, because especially a knight has obviously two arms, two legs, but it's also like 11 weapon systems and a bunch of other things.
So many systems.
So you have to be hardwired in to be able to take it all in. Now, the flip side, though, is there is a side effect to this, and that's how you become a pilot of a knight. You have to sit in something called the Throne Mechanicum. And the Throne Mechanicum is just a pod.
Sensory deprivation pod,
though. Yeah, but it's super cool because a pod's actually separate from the knight. What I like about this is that the way we're jumping ahead, but this is a cool thing. The way a pilot pilots a knight, which is a better way for me to say that probably, anyway, is they get into the pod and all the linkages connect to them. Then the pod itself is inserted into the knight and it connects that way, which makes a lot of sense because knights are between 9 and 12 meters, 30 to 40 feet tall. And you have to have a bunch of servants loading the pilot in to the Throne Mechanicum. So just do that basically on a ground floor and then drop it into the knight versus having to have everyone climb all the way up with you and do it that way. It's like, oh, that's a clever idea. Way to go, GW. But on that, the Throne Mechanicum, not everyone can get into it. You have to go through training in order to interact with it. Although, I'll be honest, the training's not that involved. Like, they wrote this whole thing out about you have to train for it. It's all this practice. It's one day. You go and you sit in it, and you have to you test out. So an aspirant goes and sits in a Throne Mechanicum, and they're plugged into it for one evening.
You also forgot the fact that occasionally people
just we're going to get there.
Die or become insane. I'm just
pointing out where like the Space Marine process is like a year. These guys, like, it's a really involved process to become a pilot for a night. You have to do some cardio. Okay. And then you have to, like, you know, do some studying. Okay. And then you have to go into this. You'd be locked into the Throne Mechanicum. Oh my God, is it for like a month? Yeah, it's like we go in at night, and then at sun up, we open it and see how you're doing.
Yeah, they basically plug you in, and if you don't die, then you're good. However, they just hose that off quite a bit.
But still, it's 8 hours is all I'm getting at. Like, you know, that's it. Anyway, so over the course of the night, the aspirant's mind in this situation will kind of basically wrestle with the throne itself. And this is because the throne is a machine spirit. What they're actually doing is they're actually merging themselves with a machine spirit in a mind meld. And over the course of the night, to Brad's point, some are driven insane. Others are just killed because the machine spirit just melts their brain. Interestingly, though, the fatality numbers for this can be as low as 10%.
I feel that these are lies.
Some, it can be.
Certain knight families just say that everything works out, because the other part is, it can be up to 50%.
It could be up to 50% of people who go in there die. But I want to point out, that versus Custodes and Space Marines is still it's a pretty good.
Especially Custodes.
Yeah. Pretty good return on investment is all I'm getting at. So anyway, there are two outcomes of this process. The first one is the aspirant now can interface with the Throne Mechanicum. So they can now, you know, after passing this ritual, it's called a ritual of becoming. After they pass that, they can forever link and take control of the night without these dangers happening again. The second one, though, is more important. They're actually changed mentally.
Oh, forever. Wildly so.
And so the process of this implanting with the Throne Mechanicum is a two-way process. Well, really, it's actually just one way, but I'm going to say two-way. The pilot.
Like, what's the other way?
Well, the pilot has to, you're right, because the machine spirit doesn't take anything. Basically, you're right. It's a one-way process. The pilot takes on the machine spirit into their own spirit and being. And this spirit actually changes their brain. So once an individual goes through this process, their personality flips to being more like
you're like, my personality changed. Right. No,
they become obsessed with honor and duty, genuinely obsessed. Yeah, and anyone who's read like a book on like a fantasy story about knights and chivalry, it's that. Which I want to make I'm going to do a little John side tirade.
Oh, you're going to make everything suck.
Because we need to. This drives me nuts. They talk about like, I'm about knight and chivalry. Anyone who's read history knows medieval knights are a freaking nightmare. They are horrible. Well,
I mean, the code of chivalry actually really only applies to battling other knights.
It is, but it also, they're horrible people. Everything, the King Arthur stories are adorable. The original, not the one with like.
I'll fight you if you bring up other stuff.
What?
Don't besmirch the good King Arthur.
Well, which good King Arthur? There's the King Arthur books, and there's the better one who has an exceptional knowledge of the flight patterns of swallows, both African and European.
I didn't even want to fight.
Not quote that. I'm going to quote the movie every chance I get. But this, the obsession with honor and duty for these knights,
it's an obsession.
Yeah, comes out of nowhere. It appears immediately after the ritual is over. And it's a true obsession, becomes their singular purpose. The second piece they take on as part of this is really weird ego boost. They start to view themselves as selected for greatness by a higher power. The machine spirit chose them, not another, to be able to power what is a god machine. And so this is because of their own superiority.
Now, this does become a little bit of a meh when you're trying to fight with other knights.
Yeah, because they become a little competitive.
They're wildly competitive. Yeah.
And this competitive spirit is interesting because they become massive egotists. And so they focus all their efforts on proving they are the most honorable and most loyal. And this will definitely cause a ton of problems later.
You know what I want to say on this? As much as I sometimes don't like Knights on the Table, the knightly honors, the Imperial Knights, the Loyalist Forces of Knights, have great lore to tabletop the knightly.
They're pretty good.
The duties they have to choose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, their weaponry doesn't, but yeah.
No. I'm just saying.
I just laugh at that.
The olds that you have to choose and everything else. Remember, you can't fall back.
Killing a knight with like guardsmen. Just a funny concept.
With lasguns.
Yeah, with lasguns.
Yeah.
I will say.
Lethal hit lasguns.
Yeah. Taking stomps out of the game is a kind of a good thing. But it also made so much sense that knights in 8th and 9th edition could just walk up to you as guardsmen and just step on you and kill you and move on with their
day. The fact that a 20-man, actually just go with the 50-man conscripts and just go first rank, second rank, and put lethal hits on them, and a knight would die, the knight would know that lasguns are being fired at it.
Remember in 8th edition when you could tag a knight and it couldn't shoot weapons because there was a single grot near its toe, so none of its weapon systems worked.
So stupid.
Oops. All right.
Like, I might not even know you're there.
All right, but back to the cast. So the cool thing about these changes mentally that are happening to the pilots of the knights is it appears that they were done intentionally. Not a side effect, but actually like something that was built into the STCs. And this makes sense because when we talk about honor and duty and these types of things, this is a person plugged into a war machine. They are a massive threat. You could wipe out the entire city that you're there to protect.
Right.
And they would have nothing to
do. You want this guy to have duty and honor as his forefront so that he doesn't go, hey, I'm now Warlord Ted.
And so the belief is that the early, I mean, this is before the Mechanicum. This is the origins even further back.
Again, 26,000
years. So they built this so that the pilots would have this weird duty and honor to everyone around them. This would prevent them from ever turning on the population. So as we said, not all human colonies had knights, by the way.
Very few of them, actually.
Yeah, it's a very small percentage. However, all the knight worlds ended up in a similar situation. The imprint of the ritual created this kind of uniform psyche amongst all the knight pilots. And it's kind of hard for me to explain this in a linear fashion. So GW wrote this all in terms that from a folk history standpoint are positive. But again, I'm going back into this again. Actual history, they're horrifying. So,
well, they became feudalism because they had houses.
Yes. And so I just want to get this.
Royalty.
Yeah.
It wasn't royalty. It was nobility. Nobility.
Let me get this out of the way because I need to do this. Because obviously, thanks to Discord, I do know we have quite a few people who listen to our cast who are pretty serious history buffs. Feudalism was an absolute nightmare. The kings and the lords exploited anyone and everyone below them at a horrifying level that made that it was slavery. It was effective slavery. The great knights of legends are actually nothing more than brutal mercenaries that would actually rape and pillage lesser settlements constantly.
Why do you have to make everything suck?
Because people are going to listen to this, and I can't, from a moral standpoint, talk about feudalism. Like, wasn't it great? It wasn't. It sucked. Yeah. All right? They were basically pirates more than they were nobility. But the feudalism of legend is one of positivity. Noble men going on quests to kill evil kings, acquire lost relics, right the wrongs of society.
I'm just saying, my Bretonian army in fantasy with his sweet-ass banners and cool colors looks pretty awesome.
He does, but in reality, they were a nightmare. So when we use the term feudalism here, we're using the term that's associated with fantasy, like King Arthur, not with anyone who's read a book. So anyway.
And that is John making things terrible.
I need to do this. It's something that's always driven me nuts.
Yeah. You know what I think's awesome? Sweet banners.
Yeah, there's an option. All right.
What?
The psyche that infected all of the pilots of the knights made them view society from an us and them perspective, but with a positive swing. The pilots of these knights were nobles, but they viewed themselves as being tasked with protecting and caring for all their subjects. And the subjects' job was just to live their lives and help grow the kingdom, knowing they were safe from harm thanks to these noble knights that were always watching over them.
This kind of worked, though.
Yeah, no, because again, it's not real, so it works perfectly. And the knights did it. They looked over the population where the giant walkers, they would kill.
There's also things actively trying to kill.
Yeah, and they did a great job. And these massive not only would they kill the enemies of the people, but they also used their giant machines to help with the work of the settlement. Like we said earlier, mining, agriculture, whatever, clearing a forest with their giant chainsword. These were great. So over time, all of the knight worlds turned into these feudal kingdoms where the nobility class, you know, had an attachment of knights and they just looked over the population. Because obviously over time, these pilots had kids and then those kids joined the ritual of becoming. And so the family became a family of knights, but they also became a family of protectors. And these worlds lived in a true symbiotic relationship. As opposed to, and I'm going to call a book out here, Simplicius Simplicissimus. And for the one or two of you that may know what that is, you'll know what I'm referring to, because dear God, real feudalism was horrible.
Probably worked.
It's a book literally written by a guy. It's a Simplicissimus, one of my favorite books. It's written phonetically.
Oh, God.
It's so hard to read, but this guy's talking about his life being like kidnapped. And like watching his mother and sister get raped to death and all these things.
This is awesome.
Yeah, it sucked. Anyway.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So over centuries, these houses and their traditions grew. We'll touch more on this later, but after 15,000 years in current 40K, these noble houses are basically the same as they were back then, which is kind of a nice piece of evidence of how powerful the machine spirit imprint is on the minds of these pilots. Because no matter who goes through the ritual of becoming, they all come out the exact same unless they fall in chaos.
Can we just accept the fact that a machine spirit's an AI?
It's not, though. I disagree. It's not an AI. It's not, because it's beyond an AI. It's actually scarier than an AI.
It's totally an AI.
When we do our cast on the age of technology, I will make a ton of movie references to what I think machine spirit is, but Lawnmower Man comes to mind.
I mean, good movie. Also, better story.
Yeah, not good movies. Two not good movies. Cool concepts, two not good movies.
Yeah, I mean, you got me. Settle down. James Bond was in that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not good James Bond. All right, so there is a really important side effect, though, of this feudal rule. It circles back to kind of what we were discussing earlier. All these societies had a very strong leadership structure, and the society were structured, there was a true symbiosis between the nobility and the ruled class. So when these first psychers start to appear, they got snuffed out on the night worlds.
Snuffed out? I mean, quick.
Yeah, because it was a twofer. The nobility didn't want like these upstarts getting powers, but also the ruling class were ratting them out because they were like, hey, we've got a good gig going. I don't really need a revolution right now. So as a result, the age of technology turned into the age of strife. The night worlds really weren't that affected. So long as they had, you know, even the men of Iron Rebellion or Demon Possession, you know, that kind of stuff, they had knights. They were able to deal with
it. Unknown. I don't even think the night worlds even knew about demonic possession because they killed the psychers so fast.
Yes. Well, there probably was like some psychers in the village on the other side of the planet. And they're like, sure. Oh, you come a bunch of weird things. And, you know.
Yeah. When you've been a psycher for 6 days and night shows up.
Yeah. Cannon go burr. Yeah. Problem solved.
Yeah. I hit him with a volcano cannon. Was he a psycher? Was he a demon? I don't know.
There's a crater there now. Yeah. Someone want to go look?
Go look. Yeah.
I don't know. So what happens is, as long as the planets had enough food to feed themselves, they survived. And so from there, I actually think we should spend a little bit of time talking about the structure of a night world and how these societies are designed. So let's talk about the structure of the night houses and the societies that they're a part of. So effectively, there's multiple types and styles of knights. They're just organized big to small. The largest platforms are the rarest. And I'm not talking about titans, just big knights. We'll talk about titans in the next cast. So like your largest is your Acastus pattern. These are just massive hulking knights. They're incredibly rare. They would only have gone to a world that was being held that was basically in active combat. They mostly only existed on Mars itself.
Yeah, but Lancers and Atropos is cool.
No, but those are smaller than this. The Acastus is the largest.
Oh, that's the Trace. Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, the next one up. Yeah, the next one up are the Dominus. which in 8th edition had castellans, which I believe are missed by no one. I don't think anyone is like, man, I wish we still had castellans at tabletop. After that is what you were just thinking of, the Cerastus. The Cerastus pattern was pretty cool. They were this, like, they're a super fast knight.
They were made for it. They're made for speed.
Yeah, which is, don't know why.
Well, you had a lot of the enemies of the Imperium knights were actually really, really fast. Yeah. So it's, you have something that can answer.
Yeah. They're one of actually the better looking knights, in my opinion. The most common one.
Lancer looks so awesome with that. I mean, it's stupid, but it's awesome.
With his dumb shield. Yeah.
It looks cool, though.
It does. And then you're like, oh, it doesn't, it's not very big.
But also, it has a power shield around the entire
The entire thing has an ion shield, but at least there's a dude holding something,
which is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks awesome. It does look cool.
The most common variation of the Questorus pattern. This is when we think about 40K knights. It's a Questorus. This is, and by the way, all these, I should mention, these are all chassis, every single one of them. So every world you got this chassis, and then you would customize it based on your needs. The last one, though, actually, I'm bringing this all makes sense why I'm bringing this up in a second, is it Armigers, which are just baby knights. These are meant to be like fast skirmisher units that would hunt in packs effectively to achieve the same value as a big knight, because they would use their mobility instead of armor for protection. The reason I bring this up is this has to do with the way a society ends up getting ranked out, because the bigger the knight, the bigger the deal. Knights, and I could be wrong on this, but I do believe that if you can interface with one knight, you can interface with all knights. I don't believe that the different it's the same pop.
It's weird though, because I thought you were semi-tied to that machine spirit.
Yeah, but that's why
knight could blow up and you could do another knight, but I still think you don't leave your existing knight.
Well, that's what I think is, I think the machine spirit is in the throne you sit in. I think that throne plugs into the knights. It's kind of how I read
it. It's weird because a lot of the small knight drivers become big knight drivers.
Because the way that society is structured in these worlds, the bigger the knight, the more important you are. So if you're like, you know, a lowly, you know, noble, you're going to drive an armiger. But if you actually become successful, you could end up being running a castellan.
Is that why people running warglaves go crazy and run at you at Mach 1000?
I just, the way people like to play knights. This does, although the funny thing about this though, is that remember all of these people who are driving these things do have, just a fun little side note, have a little bit of a challenge where mentally they're all obsessed with honor and glory.
And being the best at honor and glory.
So the smaller the knight, the more psychopathic the driver probably is to try and prove themselves to get further up, which means the small, weak knights are the least reliable because they're not going to follow a plan. They're going to fly out of it and go anywhere and try and get glory for themselves.
You overextending warglaive.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm going to make two comments that one, it's still the case in the 41st millennia in the lore. And two, as someone who plays against knights every now and then, all you knight players, you don't have to come. You don't have to charge forward with every single baby knight the first turn.
Yes, you do. It makes it so much easier to win.
That's right. Yeah, Brad and I both play combat armies. It actually is kind of good for us when all of my models are hidden behind a wall and you put everything in your army at a charge distance.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You with your power fist and me with just my orcs. I mean, like
power claws.
Yeah. What if I just kill all of them? All of these knights, though, do have one thing in common. And that is that they're built by an STC, and that STC just builds the knight. The knight then, from a societal standpoint, has to be maintained and improved. And so after conflicts and battles, the knights themselves begin to take damage. And so as we said, all the knights were originally they're basically identical. And they were designed as take all comers.
But they're not, because after a few battles, the knights look like Fast and the Furious cars.
Yeah, because they have to add more pieces to it.
Yeah.
But not only that, but even before the battles, they have to be customized because you land on a planet and depending on the climate, the terrain, the type of enemies.
What you're fighting.
Yeah, they would customize the knights up. And so when we talked about before, all the knight pilots, their nobility ranked, you know, top to bottom, big knight to small knight, you know, either, you know, the big knight is the king and the king's 32nd, you know, removed nephew is riding an armiger. probably aggressively, you know.
Probably way too far.
Way too fast. The next tier down is this subclass of nobility who became the masters of working on the knights. And to Brad's point, they would, you know, upgrade the armor to adamantium because it's always adamantium in sci-fi. Apparently, every ship had a bunch of adamantium on it along with the STC.
The funny thing is, it's supposed to be this rare element, but everyone has just stockpiles of it.
Yeah, and it's also like apparently they can just make it. They never go into it, which is actually a good call because if they'd gone into it, I'd crap all over it because it gets
true long. Story.
So these people would then also upgrade the armaments. They would use the STCs and they would actually change weaponry, tooling, better chain swords because the forestry is denser, more focused cannons for blasting through harder rocks, wide array volcano cannon concept. Awesome. Tabletop. Man, when that thing misses, it just hurts inside. It's worse than the railgun. They would also make like wide array cannons, though, for dealing with hordes of enemies. You know, this is where you start seeing stubbers shoved all over all these knights because they just had hordes to deal with.
You think that if these guys would have went to the AdMech, they would have been in charge? Because in the knight society, they just don't.
They get there. You're jumping.
I'm just saying. Originally, though.
Because that's a really interesting point. Initially, these artificers never gained any real prominence in society. They were critical for the nobility. Without them, there are no knights. But they took a very distant back seat to the rest of it.
Wildly distant.
My theory on that, though, is I think that they viewed it as a self-serving task because if they kept the knight more powerful, they were safer. So they would,
If you're a knight world, if your knights are better, you will probably be safer.
But I would also admit that probably the works of Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie weren't being listened to at this era. And if you don't know what I'm talking about,
settle down, heretic.
Yeah. although over time, these artificers did pick up a second role, which is kind of cool. Artist. They began decorating the knights with symbols and logos, you know, just like, you know, any feudal house, both fantasy and real, they did have banners.
I want to go into 40K, though. Some of the most beautiful freehand is on some of the larger knights in 40K.
Because we have the space to do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
A lot of the best painters in the game will move at some point. I'll throw
props out to Noah Badome, Josh Ford, just people that just do wildly beautiful artwork.
Insane. There's some knights out there that you look at and you go, please don't put that on the tabletop. I don't want to be in the presence of that knight moving around.
Yeah.
Like I want it behind a display case. So
don't
I
let
can't,
me touch it.
Yeah. I don't want to be anywhere near. I'm worried one of my dice will hit it. That being said, the knights themselves, as they took on the roles of nobles, also changed a lot. They became less warrior and more diplomat. Because as a noble of a society, you have to handle all the manners of state. Allocation of resources, settling local disputes, arranging marriages to strengthen and weaken other houses. I mean, all the Machiavellian stuff also has to come into play here. And what's kind of cool in the story is that these weren't the passions of these nobles, because at their core, their psyche's been changed. The rite of becoming has made them, they just want to be warrior kings.
Yep.
But they can't. They have to go do BS all day. And so one of the things that they talk about a lot in the books is these nobles are at their happiest when they're piloting a knight.
Joyous when they're at war. Yeah,
this is where they want to be. And so, because all the weights and all the weight of decisions and the state disappear, they just operate their war machine and do what they do best. This will come up more in our next cast, but, you know, sometimes a noble just hops in their knight and leaves, becoming a knight of legend. So we're going to deal with that on our next cast a bit more, but just calling it out now. One flip side of this, though, there is an issue the Night Lords have, and this is rival factions. So over thousands of years of darkness, the nobility classes grew and grew. And, you know, the first Night Pilots were not necessarily all related to each other. So when they started having kids and making noble families, at the core, there's only going to be one king. So you've got numerous families that all can pilot knights. How does this get settled? Always the word competition comes up. Some were more positive than others. So sometimes they would just hold big, actual, literal competitions among the knight warriors.
Well, they kept coming up with different competitions. It wasn't even the same competition.
Yeah, well, because every world was different. But some of them would be like, hey, we're going to go on a grand hunt. And whoever can kill the most, like Xenos wins. Or there'd be like a games, like, you know, like the
other. It was almost jousting, basically, about.
Yeah, I don't like it being jousting. No, I don't like that, but that's a mistake because you'd injure the knight. I want it being more like the Scottish Highland Games, where it's like
just chucking stuff.
Just whose knight can run the fastest, whose knight can throw the heaviest tree over its head. It, to me, is more entertaining. And what they would do is, this is more, by the way, the functional worlds. Whoever won the competition would then take the mantle of king for a set period of time until the next set of games came around. This, for the most part, by the way, was on the up and up. There are some rumors now that there might have been some cheating at play in a few of them, but for the most part, it was pretty even. But not on all worlds. At some worlds, the rival factions couldn't come to terms with each other.
And then they just killed each other.
Yeah. And then, yeah, best case scenario was just subterfuge, but off more often than not, pure war. And a lot of these worlds didn't survive. Luckily, though, for the ones that did survive, Slaanesh was born. And I say luckily because when Slaanesh was born,
warp travel was back.
Warp travel comes back on the table, and for the first time in about 5,000 years.
Or more, depending.
Exactly.
Depending on where you were, to be honest.
And the Admech.
To be fair.
Yeah. The Admech and a soon-to-be donned Imperium of Man are about to break into the stars.
The Crusade. Yeah.
And I think we're going to break there because next week we're going to pick up the Night Houses from that point about the discovery by the Imperium being brought back into the fold and a lot of the changes to their structure and that kind of that came as a side effect of that.
And the alignment with the Mechanicum, well, depending on what house, because some are allied pretty close and some are not.
Yeah, well, some just aren't allied with the Mechanicum.
Yeah,
so. True. But until next week, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.